It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannocco, Renee Richey are here. We're going to still talk, yes, we can't stop, about the MacBook Pro. Really interesting theory from Horas Dedieu at Asimco about why there'll never be a touchscreen Mac OS. We'll dig that in, dig that apart, find out why the AirPods aren't shipping, maybe until next year. And we've got some great picks of the week, too. I think it's going to be a very nice, well-rounded, fun Mac Break Weekly. Stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 532, recorded Tuesday, November 8th, 2016. XP halitosis. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. And by Optical Cables by Corning. Corning's incredibly durable Thunderbolt and USB 3.0 optical cables are longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to opticalcablesbycorning.com to learn more. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device at gazelle.com today. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we talk about the latest from Apple. Andy Iannocco is here from the Chicago Sun-Times. He's wearing his Cthulhu beret or something. What is this?
Yes, this is my there's a hat company in Poland, and I keep buying more of their hats because
like
they're
berets.
Really cool. This isn't like a novelty one. This is like an actual wool one that I wear. It's like the warmest hat that I actually own.
Yeah.
So I originally bought it because it wasn't that expensive and looks kind of cool, and you can get them in actual real person sizes. And then like the first super cold day of last winter, I just wore it just out of necessity. Oh, my God, I'm so warm. And I can actually fold it and put it someplace. And so
they're handy.
Also, I'm now old enough that I'm not quite old enough for the old person sitting by the bench reading a beige newspaper as the idol to Willie Verdier. But I'm getting there, and I can sort of pull this off.
You can pull it off. Absolutely. Or I could see you drinking absinthe in a cafe, maybe having some paella.
Playing the part of the idle Boulevardier. I came across that phrase in a book like when I was a teenager. Like, career goal. I want to play the part of the idle Boulevardier. That was P.G. Woodhouse. P.G. Woodhouse.
If you could just say it, it's good. And also with us, he is far from a Boulevardier. He is in a French, francophone land from Montreal, Canada, Rene Richey.
I'm trying so hard not to ask if Andy just joined the Automator team at Apple.
Oh, yes, it's the Sal Segoyan hat, isn't it?
If this can impart upon me 1/10 of the fundamental Salness of Sal Segoyan, I would be wearing a stack of these to get the full 100%.
Renee's at imore.com, or as we say in French, y plus. And oui. y plus. And joins us every week to talk about the latest from Apple. We're now going to be in that slow season where Apple's announced everything it's going to announce this year.
I hope. Last year they went until December. I mean, that battery case came out in December.
Well, and frankly, we are still left hanging on the AirPods. You have had a pre-production model for some time. Apple announced, at the same time as they announced the new laptops, they announced, we're going to be a little bit delayed. How delayed are we on these AirPods?
A couple weeks and counting. I mean, they were supposed to come out in late October, and we're now, the 8th or 9th of November.
Do you have an ETA of some kind?
No, it's one of those things where it sounds like they want to – when they say it's not quite right, it sounds like there's something they need to fix in them, and it'll go until that thing is fixed. I don't think it's white iPhone 4 bad, but I think, they want to make sure it's a great product when it ships.
This story scares me. This is Apple might be delayed until 2017. Killian Bell writing this one. Is this 9to5 Mac? I can't remember. Yeah,
Cult to Mac.
I'd have to see good evidence for thinking that. I would have to think that whatever it is would have to be an absolute showstopper for them to say that to lose a deadline this badly and also lose holiday shopping, because if there's one thing that they were destined to sell out of stuff in 12.8 seconds. Exactly. It's an expensive Bluetooth headphone, but as an item with a 2016 item with an Apple logo on it, it's dirt cheap and everybody can use it. So yeah, everyone was going to be buying this. So yeah, they're going to do whatever they have to do. Blood sacrifices. Craig Federighi will put his mortal soul in jeopardy if it involves getting this thing to ship. Actually, it's not.
Dormammu will get involved.
Renee, as somebody who has these, though, can you pinpoint something that's wrong with them?
No, I mean, I have a pre-production unit that's on a special build on a review unit phone, and it works really well for me. There are occasional times when it doesn't connect the way it should, but I would say like maybe one out of 30 times I have problems with it. But I don't know on the manufacturing end or, you know, on the latest versions of iOS. There's nothing in it to me that screams showstopper. But like we saw last year, I mean, they changed the tip on the Apple Pencil last minute, and that resulted in delays. They had a hard time manufacturing the keyboard, the ablated cloth on the Apple Smart Keyboard, and that had delays. I mentioned the white iPhone 4, because it took them a long time to get a coating that wouldn't discolor and also wouldn't obscure the sensors in the front of the display. And that, I think, took them 6 to 9 months to get right. I have no sense that it's any big production problem. Yeah. So I'm hoping that we get it before the holidays.
Also, you know, Apple is known for not making things that tend to explode at airports, becoming an international crisis. I think we all can respect that. Hey, if there's something that they think is wrong, instead of no one will remember that it's late if it's great when it ships and doesn't cause any problems. That's the issue.
Yeah, it may just be. Could it also be just manufacturing issues?
Yeah, it could be yield. It could be one of many things. It could just be an issue with the way it connects to one, like a few edge cases that they think are important enough that they have to fix.
Right.
Yeah. Yield is something that you really have to focus on when you're talking about why something ships and why something doesn't. It's really easy to make 10 copies of something or 100 copies of something or 1,000 copies of something if you're allowed to throw away whatever doesn't really work quite well. Just like when I take 9,000 photos and post 80, it's like it doesn't matter that I have to throw away 8,000 in order to get to the 50 that are good. But when you're talking about the scale that Apple's doing, the fact that they have a process that works really, really well, but it results in some pieces that don't fit together quite correctly, or some welds and solders that don't really, that are good but not that, that keep failing QR. That's one of the reasons why why the first generation of 4K panels costs a huge amount of money, because they're throwing out one in every 10. But after 2 years, when they get the manufacturing locked down, suddenly you can't buy a panel that's 4K that isn't 4K because now they're not throwing out one in 10.
We talked a little bit on Sunday. Jason Calacanis and Peter Rojas were on Twit about these new laptops, the MacBook Pros with the OLED touch bar, and people's disappointment about it. And I was kind of surprised. The negativity coming from Peter and Jason was essentially Apple had lost it, that this was Apple demonstrating it did not have the innovative chops. Here's a similar article from Vlad Zavov at The Verge. The MacBook Pro is a lie. I think we might agree it's not a professional in the sense that it's designed to be the most powerful laptop possible.
Yeah. I read that, and I thought that was a little bit over the top. I think that the MacBook Pro. I mean, everybody who hasn't heard last week's show, definitely, because the four of us had a really great conversation about it with a lot of different opinions. I think it's a great machine for a lot of people. It's just not a great machine for the same people that were attracted to the MacBook Pro in the first place. I certainly wouldn't say this. Take this as a sign of any greater failing in Apple. In any case,
I think the most you can say is Apple's made some decisions about what it thinks the Macintosh is for, who it's for, and the markets it wants to go after. There you go. I love this one. The MacBook Pro is not the root of all evil. That's from ZDNet.
It comes down to it really is a case where you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, because Apple is boring. If they just do a spec bump, they're boring. But if they do anything else, you know, they're not innovative. If they do anything else, then they've lost it. They're not appeasing to me. And I actually think that's good. I think that when you try something like the touch bar, maybe the touch bar will be an absolute failure. Like, we'll look back in a year from now, like again, I'm going to go back to it, the iPod Shuffle with no buttons on it. But they're trying. And that's one of the worst things that you can do when you're at a company like this is complacency. It's bringing out the same design every year with, you know, a few more specs or fins on the tail or something. And this could well end up being fins on the tail, but it could also be something that proves to be very useful, the way a pencil on an iPad Pro might be useful, or the way that 3D Touch. Some people still really dislike 3D Touch, and some people use it all the time. And it you can't say it's a slam dunk, but you can't say that it's useless either. And I think that doing this at least shows that Apple is invested in the Mac, and they're spending years and years with ideas. And there's a Horace Dedya piece you're going to get to, I think, in a few minutes. Yes. that really nails a lot of this. And I think that's absolutely true. And whether this does, if you are a pro and you were hoping for a computer with 32 to 64 gigabytes of memory, the latest NVIDIA graphics cards, and the highest specs money can buy, Apple is basically saying, we're not making that computer anymore. And I'm assuming they have internal numbers that tells them where the highest value they can extract from the Mac market is. And that might sound cold and calculating, but it could be they ran the numbers and they said, we'll sell 500 or 5,000 of these, and we just don't want to do a separate
ask, is it Apple's responsibility to serve every group and niche that it has served up to this point? And at some point, every company may disappoint some customers.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And again, I refer people back to last week's show for the really in-depth stuff. Yeah. My difficulty when I see something like this is when they do something that seems to be across the entire line that gives Mac people absolutely no choice but to make this a, do I go forward with a Mac or do I go forward with a Windows machine from this point forward? Because they are... Again, they are the only suppliers of Macintosh hardware.
That's
so
the
they
problem.
Make a decision. Yeah. So, but at the other side, though, however, it sounds as though I'm saying, oh goodness, they have this wonderful, powerful monopoly. But then you look at the world doesn't consist of just the Macintosh. The world does not consist of just the United States. Where Apple only has the Mac only has like well under 10% of the desktop market share. Which means that if they had any hope of making computers that everybody could making a product line that would cover the majority of customers out there, again, not one computer that everybody can use, but we'll make four computers and everybody will find a choice among the four of them. They really don't have the ability to sell 90% of the computers that are out there. So if they decide, I'm sorry that I didn't jot it down, but in the discussion on Twitter I had with some people, someone made the suggestion that the MacBook Pro has maybe they've decided that they're going to make the best enterprise laptop, meaning not necessarily something that you would give to a video editor that's doing multiple 4K streams. But when you give something that a company will buy 500 copies of because all their executives, they don't want the MacBook Air. They want they're telling their departments, oh, no, I need the really powerful thing for opening my Google Docs and checking my email. And they want something that's sexy on that when they put it onto the conference table and open it up. And if Apple has run the numbers and decided that not that this is the future of all computing, but if there is a world in 2020 in which Apple can still be competitive, make a lot of money in the laptop business, it's going to be with a machine like this and not with a machine that's like the 2015 MacBook Pro. So that's something that they're a company.
One could almost say that their sole mistake was to put the word Pro in the name.
Yeah, I think that if they call this an extension of the MacBook Air line, then conceptually I don't think anybody would have a problem with it. They would think, oh my God, is it wonderful they made this incredibly thin and light machine, but that's, for heaven's sakes, it's almost as good as my MacBook Pro. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking about not buying a MacBook Pro and buying a MacBook Air. This thing is so popular. But again, there are a lot of people, when you get to the Pro level, there are lots of different reasons why people want something with the Pro label on it. I will give you a personal example. I keep talking about how much I love my Olympus OMD EM1, and it is what has Olympus decided. This is Olympus's Pro level camera, and for Pro, does it mean that it has the fastest focusing and it can shoot 80 frames per second of RAW? Actually, for me, it's the fact that when I dropped it on the pavement in New York City a couple weeks ago, I didn't even really think, oh my God, is it broken? It's like, okay, well, I guess I should secure that better next time, because it's built so well that I knew that nothing bad had happened to it. And that's why I was spending the extra money for something like this. So, but there'll be people who are, hey, I'm a sports photographer. I don't care that I'm going to take care of my equipment. I want something that will go really, really fast. I want something that will have a really good focus tracking. So when you get to the Pro level, there's so many definitions of it that it's hard to make a really narrow choice in what you're going to build without pissing off a lot of people and sending a lot of people to your competitors. So I don't like it.
But part of,
go ahead.
I think the problem also is that if they called these anything other than the MacBook Pro, all we'd hear for the next 6 months is where's the MacBook Pro?
Right.
And they want to tell people that there's no other laptop coming from
this
them.
This is it. people are still saying where's the MacBook Pro?
But now it's with hate and not longing.
Part of the problem is that we're still working in a vacuum. We don't have them yet. And so I can't, and I maybe you guys can, because I can't tell you if I like the keyboard or not. I'm worried, as is Andy. I know about the keyboard looking too much like the MacBook's keyboard. We don't know how good the OLED Touch Bar is, and we won't even know that for a while. We have to use it for a while to really get a sense of what it can do and see what other apps use it and so forth. So in a way, the jury's out on this hardware. All we can look at is the specs and say, and the dongles required and so forth, and say, well, that's, I would like an SD card slot. I miss the MagSafe adapter. I'd like to see better graphics. I'd like to see a faster CPU, et cetera. I'd like to see touch, et cetera, et cetera. That's just, you know, that's opinion. That's the sad thing is you can't go somewhere else and get a Mac OS computer that fits your specs. This is it.
There's a huge Hackintosh community. I, matter of fact, used to have, before the iPad, I had a Hackintosh netbook that ran, I think, Mac OS 10.4, 10.6.
You know, when this happened, I went out and looked at the Hackintosh stuff, and they've really kept it up to date, haven't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something you can't expect a consumer experience. You can't expect that when there is something if something breaks or a piece of software for some reason doesn't work, or suddenly hardware acceleration doesn't work anymore. It's not, hey, let's listen to a podcast about what to do about it. iMore is not going to have a document on how to fix video acceleration. But it's an option. I tend to think, though, that if you look into building your own Macintosh compatible, you should also look into switching to Windows, because you might have a better experience. You might not, but
we should also point out that this is illegal. This is a use of the Macintosh, Macintosh operating system that Apple does not it's unethical.
You have to decide if it's unethical or not. But
yeah, I'm going to say it's unethical because Apple puts a lot of money and effort into Mac OS and says the way we subsidize this is by hardware, and you're saying, well, I'm not going to buy your hardware. I'm going to steal Mac OS. It's theft.
Well, if the feds break into your house to arrest you for your illegal grow operation in the basement, and they see a Hackintosh, they'll say, okay, great, plus another two weeks in jail for this.
Nothing's going to happen to you. Obviously, you can get away with it.
Shall we take a look at your video collection, or
No, obviously.
Well, there's no RIAA or MPAA on Apple's side.
That's why I use the word ethical. Because it's stealing. It's stealing. Not that I wouldn't do it, but it's stealing the operating system. I feel like I could do it because I give Apple a ton of money and buy a ton of hardware every year. So having an extra PC, and by the way, I don't do it because it's a pain in the butt, but having an extra
PC. You have a perfectly good Mac locked in the closet, and the copy of OS X that's supposed to be running on that is now running on.
Yeah, if you did that, then I would say, oh, that's not unethical at all. That's because you want different hardware.
Well, that's how I used to justify back before there was Comixology and back before there was Marvel.com. I would decide that, look, I have a copy of John Byrne's entire run of Fantastic Four, not only in the original pulp, but I also have them in trade paperbacks. If I download these digital copies illegally, I've already paid Marvel twice for this.
I'm just saving myself scanning time and electricity.
Yeah. I'm saving Marvel the trouble of starting a digital business, which it clearly has no interest in.
Isn't there a chance that we're being premature, that Apple will early next year say, oh, and by the way, here's the new Mac Pro, fully expandable, you know, with a huge variety of graphics cards and RAM configurations and.
There's a chance that Apple could next spring say, oh, we've heard you loud and clear. Yeah, we've heard our customers. You love your high-end laptops, and we decided we're going to add just one more on top of you. Here's a new 15-inch with 32 gigabytes of memory. Right. I mean,
well, there is a chance also. There's an indicator that they may be doing that because they dropped the cost of dongles by 50% through the end of the year. That's not even tacit. That's a explicit acknowledgement that people are unhappy about the dongle situation.
It didn't give the Steve Jobs bumper, fine, here's your dongles.
Aren't we being a little bit, Karsten made a good point. He posted a picture of his 2014 MacBook, which is running a bunch of dongles, right? Dongles are a way of life for most. I have card readers. I have a variety of different dongles. This is Karsten's MacBook, and he has a variety of things attached.
Mine looked like that for a long time.
Aren't we being a little silly? That's we've had this situation. That's kind of the way it is with computers.
Well, it comes down to first they take away a dongle. You take away one port. Now, okay, I'm not going to have one dongle. Now you wind up with the MacBook Pro where, again, you're getting $2,000 out of me. $2,000 you're getting out of me. And at least for the immediate foreseeable future, it don't do jack if you do not have a box. Not just like, here's a keyboard. Here's a physical keyboard. Can't plug it in. Here is my hard drive. Can't plug it in. Here is my monitor. Can't plug it in. Can't do anything with it unless I
biggest one to me is you can't connect the new iPhone.
I mean,
that's kind of weird. Yeah. I mean, you make a device, you know, contemporaneously with your new laptops, and your new laptops don't have the port that you'd use to connect the device.
And there's no dongle in the box the way there is on the. There was one thing that cracked me up. I don't know if you guys saw this, but John Gruber linked to a commentary on the 13-inch MacBook Pro, where this is a forum post from Mac Rumors where it says, well, I'm sure I'm going to be attacked for this, but it's got a tiny hard drive, barely enough RAM, not upgradable, no dedicated graphics, only dual-core processors. It certainly isn't bad, but Apple just took the Pro out of the 13-inch line. And come on, it's freaking expensive. And then Gruber says at the bottom, this isn't a new comment. This was posted 4 years ago in response to the last major MacBook Pro redesign.
Well, I don't think it makes it all right necessarily that they've done this.
No, it just means it's like, fool me once.
Yeah, but we are squeaky wheels, aren't we?
Well, so long as you're not, you can say that as, oh, people always complain. You can say that, yeah, Apple has a problem here. They always, every 4 years, there's something that I might be able to show, not next week, but the week after. I'm actually building a computer, and this is one where this isn't in response to the MacBook. This is something that I've had an idea for several months. I thought it'd be just a fun project and maybe it'd have something interesting to play with afterward. And it's interesting once you get down to, no, there will be nothing in this hardware that I don't want to be there. And whatever goes in here is exactly what I want it to be and how it works. And the first time I had it working over the weekend, finally, in its final, like, not put together into a box configuration. So basically on my drafting table over here, just like all the components and all the circuits wired together and it works. And even in this horrible, you know, exploded R2-D2 version of it, it's like, my God, this doesn't have anywhere near the power of my MacBook. But look at this. When I travel with this, I don't have to travel with anything but this. I can plug things into it and I can have networking plugged into it. And my goodness, it's not an epiphany, but it's like, I forgot what it was like to have a computer that you don't need any dongles for. And you realize that you had your will broken, not just by Apple, but by makers of Windows machines, because Lord knows that when you have it's not easy to find a Windows laptop that will also have all the ports you want to have on it. Certainly, again, there are a lot of different reasons why people are willing to spend $2,000 for a laptop as opposed to $1,000. One of them is the power comes in convenience. And again, the idea of how many things do I have to carry with me in order to make it. It's like they took 3 millimeters off of the box. But how much weight and bulk do you have to add into your laptop bag just so that you can plug it into power and plug it into a network? And good
sales, according to Apple, have been pretty brisk, though, for this new laptop, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to parse those because one, there's pent up demand for a MacBook Pro. Right. Two, the market for a MacBook Pro might be much bigger than the market was traditionally. And three, you have this online Apple set in their online stores, and that's the type of customer who might be bombarding Apple exactly to get it, you know, as fast as humanly possible. Yeah. So what Apple said was they're very candid about this kind of stuff. It was the fastest selling product they've had, the fastest selling Pro notebook, because it includes things before the MacBook Pro existed, that they've ever seen in their online stores. And I think that's probably perfectly legitimate.
We will we'll find out soon. The last I've heard, we're thinking a week from today, they'll start appearing in stores, November 15th, although Apple's not saying, but that seems to be kind of a consensus.
The one without the touch bar is already in stores.
Yeah,
the one
I fell for that bar this morning. I went to the store, because I check every morning, see if I can run to the store and get one, because I'd love to have it for the show.
I've been using it for the last 2 weeks.
What do you think of the OLED one, less one?
I want the touch bar just because it's new and shiny and want to play with it. But if in a world where it didn't exist, I really like this machine. It is, to me, more of a MacBook Air upgrade because it's like a Retina version of the MacBook Air.
It's more expensive, though.
Yeah, it's $500 more expensive baseline for this version than baseline for the 13-inch MacBook Air. But, you know, I'm getting really fast.
That's a whole PC laptop's worth.
Yeah, but it's Apple money. I'm getting a P3 Retina display, and for some people they could care less about that, but I really have learned to appreciate those. The SSD speeds are ludicrous. They are beyond ludicrous what Apple's managed to do with that. Yeah. And I read write a lot from those drives, so that's great for me. And I hate to say this, because like with the MacBook, I was going back and forth to my traditional 13-inch MacBook Pro, and I never sort of settled on any keyboard, and I've just been using this for the last week and a half, and I'm really enjoying it. It feels like punchy to me at this point. And when I did go back to type something on a VPN that I didn't have access to, I was like, this is all kind of jiggly and whoop-de-doo. And then I went back to this one and I'm enjoying it. So the brain has a remarkable way of changing its mind on you very quickly.
But also make sure that you take advantage of Apple's 2-week return policy. So you can buy it with the intention that, again, have multiple alerts on your phone. And if after 2 weeks you're still thinking, I hope I get used to it, don't. Just take it back. Get your money back on it.
Yeah.
The only reaction that I think is offensive regarding the keyboard is people who are dismissing people like me by saying, "Oh, you're just not used to it yet," or "Oh no, you just because your first keyboard was on an Apple II." It's like, no, it's because I like the keyboard that I like, and I'm not saying that you're stupid for liking this keyboard. I'm saying that I wish that I had the ability to buy a Mac portable that had a keyboard that was not this. It's okay.
And we should point out that you are a writer, so this is your primary tool, typing. Go ahead, Renee. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, like, I cannot use the big clickety-clackety keyboards. And I have many friends who swear by them, who immediately go and buy every form of DOS key. Like, they're searching for the perfect switch. Right. And I just can't use them. But no, I don't at all disagree with them loving those keyboards. It's a very personal thing.
I'd like something in, but I have a DOS keyboard at home. That's my main keyboard on my iMac. And I have a MacBook, and I've tried for a year to get used to it. There was nothing wrong with, this is a 2012 MacBook Pro, nothing wrong with a 2012 MacBook Pro keyboard. Has the right amount of travel. It's mushy. It's not a clickety, but it does the job, I think, quite well.
Great for stickers.
And it's wonderful when you put the comic book stickers on it. You really can't see what the hell you're doing. by the way, that's an issue with the OLED. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we will talk about Oras Dediu's, I think, quite astute article at a Simco, in which he explains why he believes that Apple will never do a touchscreen Macintosh. You can just forget that. And then I would like to talk a little about the issues raised by the touch bar. If you're a touch typist, you know where all the keys are on your keyboard, including the function keys. Take it away and put a touch bar there. You don't know. You have to look. And I think that is a significant change. Again, this is all in a vacuum, not having used it. But I think that's a significant change in how we use our keyboards. And I'm not sure for the better, but until I get one, I can't tell you. Let's take a break, though. Renee Ritchie is here from iMore.com. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is a product created by Quicken Loans specifically for you guys, people who like to live online, who don't... You know, there are still people, lots of them, I think, who would like to go to a mortgage broker or a mortgage lender and see them face to face, who like the physicality of bringing in all the paperwork, the stacks of paperwork, and looking through the loan possibilities. And that's just for them, that's something they like to do. Not so much for me. For me, if I'm going to get a loan to buy a new house or refi my existing house, I want to get it over with. I want the minimum amount of paperwork. In fact, if I could do it all online, I would. Well, now you can. Thanks to Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage takes the mortgage process into the 21st century with a completely online solution. It's fast, it's powerful, and because it's from Quicken Loans, you know it's a great solution. I love this little movie they have here, the young couple looking at a house, deciding they want it, and literally without leaving the open house, filling out the very quick form, submitting pay stubs and bank statements online and getting approved before they leave and showing the realtor and saying, yep, I think we'll take this one. And by the way, you're getting approved not only quickly, but for a custom solution that's tailored just for you. And boom, you got it. Rocket Mortgage on your phone, on your tablet. You don't even have to get up from the couch if you don't want to. I want you to check it out at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. Rocket Mortgage is an equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states, and MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Quickenloans.com /MacBreak for Rocket Mortgage, and we thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. We're really pleased to say they're coming back next year as a sponsor. And so if you, I know that, you know, a lot of you like to support our sponsors, but you may not be hunting for a house right now. Just keep it in mind. Maybe when you refi next year, keep it in mind. QuickenLoans.com/MacBreak. So do you have a Hackintosh right now, Andy?
I have one, but I haven't really fired it up in a long, long time.
I see you can make one with OS X Sierra. I mean, it's...
Yeah, because there's... Remember that every single step in the Hackintosh process starts, I think, with somebody finding a security vulnerability that allows them to install, to do stuff to Mac OS. I was using a Dell really cool, like, I think it was like a 9-inch... netbook, and before the iPad came out, and that was a daily driver, and I really, really liked it, and I was really surprised with how well macOS 10.4, 10.6 ran on this tiny, like, Core M, maybe not even a Core processor, but it had a really tiny mobile processor that was designed for Windows and netbooks, and it was running just fine. I have one repurposed old, I think it's an old Lenovo that I wasn't using, just for experimental purposes, but why Hackintosh something when you already have a Macintosh?
Yeah,
there are a lot of people building these things because they feel as though they need the RAM, they need the graphics accelerator, and they can't get it from Apple, so they're gonna have to build it themselves.
Buy a Mac. You do need access to a Mac to do the Hackintosh, because you need to get the operating system from the Mac.
It's not an easy process, but it can be done.
It's gotten easier thanks to there's tools like UniBeast. And MultiBeast to make it much, much easier. Clover.
It's a rich, rich community.
Yeah, yeah, it's clearly a community. And it's interesting because has Apple made any statement about Hackintoshes at all?
They sued SizeStar, who was actually selling them, but I don't think they've done anything about hobbyists.
That's a little blatant if you're
They didn't even really get off the ground before they said, yeah, you're not going to do that. But I would say to anybody that one of the really cool things about Apple hardware engineering is that there's a reason why they don't really put here is the CPU we have, here is the GPU we have. They have them that you can. They certainly publish that, but they don't really make that the big part of the demonstration, because it really is about we have this RAM working on with through this pipeline to this controller to this. You might get performance that you might realize that you don't actually need the hardware specs you thought you needed because you're still getting the performance that you wanted to get. So you really have to wait for these higher end MacBooks to get out in the wild before you can say definitively that this is not going to be fast enough for the work that I want to do.
Yeah. And that's the other side of this. If you are a professional and you're looking for a power tool, you're also looking for reliability. And relying on, well, just the name Hackintosh kind of implies something less than reliable. Which is why you're hearing all of these complaints. Very few professionals really want
to. You cannot take it to the Apple Store. You can take it to the Apple Store. You can show it to the genius. The genius will say, "Oh, how interesting." Next.
Tony Mac, if you go to Hackintosh.com, there's links to everything, but Tony Mac seems to have the best. Tony Mac x86.com. I'm not advocating it. But what's interesting is there's a very vibrant community that's very active right now and continues to be active on making these. So let's talk about.
There was one thing, Leo, I thought that was interesting too. It was Jonathan Zdarsky, who was the one we talked about last week, who was sort of taken aback by people not considering him a professional. So he got one of the new MacBooks and he decided to run VMware Fusion, 2 instances, Adobe Photoshop with 4 1 gigabyte, 36 megapixel, quote unquote, professional multi-layer photos, InDesign with a 22-page photography extensive product, Xcode, PowerPoint, Word, Mac OView, Mozilla Firefox, Safari, Preview, Hopper, and the list goes on and on. Tweetbot, iBook, Skype. And he says, the result, I ran out of things to do before I ran out of RAM. I only ever made it to 14.5 gigabytes for the system. So I just started paging out. So I didn't even have the chance to burn up the delicious RAM.
There you go. All right. And Jonathan's great. I trust his point of view on all this.
Yes, but can it run a web browser with more than 9 tabs that are supported by advertising? That's the real test.
Not Chrome, but yes, Safari's fine.
I want to use Mac OS. I really like Mac OS because I get a BSD under the hood. I get a command line that has a bash shell, or I use Fish. But you know, but that's the point, is I can use a real command line. There's I've never found a Unix tool that I can't run on OS X I'm sorry, I keep calling it OS X, Mac OS. and you still, so you get all that deep power under the hood, but you also get a very polished professional operating system with that great range of applications on it. I guess I would love to see more diversity in the hardware. I think that's all we're really saying is let's get a more diverse hardware platform.
Or just put a higher end machine on top of the stack.
Yeah. But if the option is Windows 10, that's a tough move for me to make. Fortunately, Linux is coming along, but without the Adobe Creative Suite on Linux, it's not a great viable option. You know what's interesting is more and more we're doing what we can do in Chrome. We can do in the browser. And that's what's made Linux, desktop Linux, actually viable, I think, is that you can run a modern, powerful browser and run all the extensions and really do a lot, for most people, almost everything that you'd want to do with this.
It's pretty amazing. When the Raspberry Pi platform 2016 was a barn burner. They had a Chicago Cubs type season with developments that really, really brought the platform forward. One of them is that they released a new version of the Raspberry Focus desktop called, confusingly enough, Pixel, on the year that Google decided to release the Pixel. But one of the parts of it is that they have an official port of Google's Chromium browser that ships, that when you install the Raspberry operating system on your $35 or even your $5 computer, it has the Chromium browser. So it has obviously it's the open source version of Chrome. So you have code that Google has written and optimized for doing Google apps. And so YouTube works great. All the Google Docs work great. Google apps work great. Also, all the third-party apps that are certainly not going to stress a browser more than Google does also work great. So if you find yourself spending most of your time on Google Sheets and Instagram and all this other stuff, you might find that this $35 computer will do a really good job for you. Yeah. And for people who can't buy, who have to rely on a $35 computer, they now have a machine that will do, I think, 80% of what any computer can do. Not as fast, but in terms of your list of things that a computer can do for a consumer, I think they've got about 80% of that list covered.
Yeah. And, you know, on my desk in my office, I have been running an iMac. And the iMac, as you might remember, had a problem. The boot drive failed. It was actually a recall, and Apple replaced it for free, even though it was a several-year-old computer. But in the interim, I had a very powerful machine I had built for home use. I was going to put FreeBSD on it. But I brought it in. It has a 4K, large 30-inch 4K display. It's NVMe M.2. It has four SSDs, very nice SSDs in it. It has very fast, it's top of the line. Actually, quad core Xeon processor in it, very top of the line, third generation Xeon or fifth generation Xeon. And they, in other words, a state of the art, as fast as I could build a PC. And running Linux on that, a great graphics card, running Linux on that is faster, frankly, than that iMac, and feels much more stable. I don't get anywhere near the issues. It's the lack of application software that is the biggest differentiator at this point. For a long time, it was looks. It was responsiveness of the mouse. You know, there was certain magic that Apple did, but Linux has caught up quite a bit.
It has a really good role, and it might be old-fashioned. I think about how trapped that I can get in the idea of, again, growing up, you didn't have, like, just one computer for you. We were lucky. The house had one computer for everybody.
Right.
And so, and not that I'm still living in the 80s, but there is a mindset that I have to get rid of, which is that there is such a thing as my one main use computer. Yeah. And when I talk about how I wouldn't be sad if this were the last MacBook I ever buy, it's possible that in 2 years' time I will realize that even having a MacBook is not as important as having a good Mac desktop, as having a Mac Mini. And it's possible that instead of every 2 or 3 years spending $2,000 on a MacBook, that money is better spent on a really good iOS tablet, whatever it is that year, a mediocre desktop that could run next door to the really good desktop I bought 2 years ago. So really, anybody who's talking about gloom and doom for the Mac platform, anybody who's talking about gloom and doom for Apple as a species, it's really old fashioned.
What about ComboZone in the chat room just had a thought. I like this thought. you know, Microsoft sells a version of Windows 10, a system builder, for people who are going to build systems. What if Apple started selling a system builder version of OS 10? Not cheap, maybe $200, but that would subsidize their development of OS 10 and allow people to make legitimate Hackintoshes. I would love that.
The question would be, how does this help Apple to sell more hardware?
It doesn't.
And that's the answer why.
Okay.
Also, they're so controlling of the product experience, they probably wouldn't want to.
Well,
you
they've
might
always
pick the
said
wrong hard drive, Leo.
They've always said the only way to make it, make your software look great is to make the hardware too, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And by doing both, they really control the experience. So this
and
gets
God help
us,
them with the support supporting people who buy that. It's not a business they probably want
to
be in.
To Horace Dedieu's, I thought, really insightful article about the Macintosh and why Apple is not going to do a touch Macintosh. And if I can summarize, you know, it comes down to this particular graph, the amount of time spent on desktops is shrinking while the amount of time on mobile devices is increasing dramatically. And he says, essentially, it's clear that we're going to make a transition to touch first mobile tablets and phones, and that Apple's in a unique position because the question they need to answer is, as we move into this touch-first universe, what is the role of the Macintosh? And it's clear that people still need Macintoshes. And he said partly that's because the touch-first system isn't mature enough yet to solve all the problems. I think he believes that it will be at some point. That at some point in 1 year or 5 years or 10 years, at some point, I don't know when, you'll be able to do everything you want to do on an iPad or an iPhone. You won't need a desktop computer. In the PC world, because they never really had a credible mobile platform for Windows, they ended up hybridizing Windows, making it a touch and desktop, and that was a nightmare for some time. I think they've kind of come through on the other side. Yeah. With Windows 10 is actually a fairly good hybrid operating system. So, in effect, Apple suppressed its immune system, allowed a disruptor to emerge in its midst, the phone and the tablet, and good for them. It's become a hugely profitable product. But the donor DNA and resources came from the Macintosh. He says, he quote, the parent that sacrificed for the child. And he says, that's why the Mac is not treated disparagingly at Apple. It deserves and gets respect. It's preserved, but with limited responsibilities. So the question is, do you make the Macintosh a touch device? He says no. He says the Mac's job as an indirect input device, keyboard and mouse, is to continue to provide those functionalities that the touch-first devices can't provide yet. The children, quote, are still adolescent and making lots of stupid mistakes. There's still life in the parents. But they have to focus on how to make the keyboard trackpad interface better while saying and believing the future is touch. And that's why we're seeing the touchpad. And it's why he says you're not going to put touch on the Macintosh. You're going to continue to focus resources on making touch-first devices better while keeping the Mac alive until such time as the parents can basically hand it off to the children. He says it may seem that Apple is pulling punches. The product could have evolved into the full-touch dual-screens pen input hybrid model of Windows, but that only makes sense if you don't have a mobile product that's promising the same and tearing up the world at the same time. You've unleashed a disruptive force, writes Dedieu, and now you're supposed to retrofit the incumbent with the tools to compete. Why not just let the disruptor grow up unhindered? The Mac is what it is because it's not alone. It's part of a family. It's a parent. It strives to be better, but will not take the future from its child. I think that's fairly astute, and I'm willing to bet that's exactly the thinking that's driving Apple at this point. You agree, Renee?
I think it depends on which side of the equation you're looking at. If they were to take Mac OS, and they've said this before, Mac OS is just not a touch-first operating system, and Apple has prototyped the bejesus out of all this stuff. They have versions of Macs running touchscreen, you know, all sorts of things. Anything we can think about, they have the money and the luxury and the time and the experimental resources to put behind. And the effort it would take, even now when people say that they're ignoring the Mac, it's just that the iPhone is such a big product, and even iPad is such a big product, that even if they love the Mac, they love it, you know, they deeply, truly love the Mac, they have to ship that iPhone. And, you know, increasingly they have to ship that iPad. And there's just, it would take so much time to make a touch version of macOS that it's probably not worth the effort. We're already seeing the iPad go pro, and you have an iPad Pro with a keyboard and with a pencil, and it's doing a lot of things in a lot of ways that the Mac just simply can't do by virtue of the input method that it has. So rather than sort of go through that awkward Windows 8 years, and I think they would have to go through that just like Microsoft did, or simply not ship for a long period of time, they're doubling down on improving iOS. And eventually iOS might supplant, you know, go make 80%, 90%, 95% of people's uses. And the Mac will still be there for a generation to come, just for people who want to do the typing, and it'll get more interesting keyboard and trackpad based input methods. But I think when they say they're going to keep those two product lines clear, I think they're absolutely genuine about that.
Yeah.
And I agree with what Renee is saying. The thing is, Microsoft had an incredible amount of freedom to make a hybrid operating system. And I'm on record as saying I think Windows 10 is really, really very good. I don't think that doesn't look like something that's been grafted onto something else. It
no,
looks
they
like
finally
they
kind
really
of got it. Yeah.
When I use a Windows and desktop configuration, it feels like it was built as a desktop computer. When I use a Windows Surface as a tablet, it feels like it was designed as a tablet. But they remember that Microsoft is a software company. And the fact that I think that they make no bones about the fact that they don't expect to revolutionize the world in any one release. It really is about we're going to release this operating system, we're going to let anybody try it while we're developing it for a year beforehand, so that we can find out what people are doing with it and how our ideas in the engineering room are actually playing out in the real world, because they realize that if Windows 8 flops, people are still going to buy Windows machine. There's machines that's going to, they're just going to run Windows 7 on it. They're not in the hardware business. That doesn't cost them anything. So they could really make those. They could spend a couple of years figuring out making a radical new operating system. Apple doesn't have that power. If they screw up the next version of the Macintosh operating system, they don't get a year or two off where nobody buys any Mac products waiting for them to figure things out. That's time in which they lose that entire slice of the revenue pie. So they can't do that. And so it really does. It comes down to, at what point does Apple decide we're going to tear down all of Macintosh operating system and rebuild it to make it support touch in a very friendly way? And the answer is, of course, you don't. You wait for the time in which you know, the forward momentum has just naturally found its absolute valley, and that's when you guide people to hop off the skateboard that's no longer rolling and hop on the one that's taking off. That's the point at which they will either say that we are keeping macOS along as a legacy, but we hope that you will like we have lots of $1,500 iPad options for people who are now using desktop style apps for the Mac. I don't think the keyboards are ever going away, or rather, I'm sorry, no one has ever posited to me a version of the future in which a keyboard in front of a screen will cease to be not just relevant, but important. And people who are thinking that, it'll always be we're moving towards everybody doing everything on
phones.
But
you can have a keyboard with a touch-first device, can't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Mind input, Leo.
Yeah. But yeah. I mean, I have a keyboard, and when I really like the keyboard with my iPad, the iPad Pro, and the
You know, the MacBook Pro this year made me realize how much I like the experience, that particular experience of the Microsoft Surface, where if I want the minuscule thin keyboard for ultra portability, I can get that. But if I want to have a really, really great experience, I can spend $90 for a Logitech K11 and get a conventional notebook style keyboard, or I can spend $150 and actually get like a compact clacky style keyboard with cherry switches. You get to basically decide what kind of experience you want to have with it. I recognize that that's not practical in any way for Apple to do, but I think that I don't think that they're going to intentionally hybridize anything. I think that they're going to continue to mature the iPad, because that's in the best interest of the iPad. They're going to continue to keep touch off of the Mac, because again, unless they decide that we're going to take 2 years off, everybody come back in 2 years, we'll show you something cool. They're not going to be able to do that. So they're just going to let nature run its course.
I think this is true. Phil Schiller should stop saying we're not making a touch Mac because it's not a good experience. because that's demonstrably false at this point.
That's embarrassing.
He puts that in context. Like he says, when you like in his most recent interview, he said like we have a menu bar in the Mac, and it's unclear what the menu bar would be in a Touch Mac environment. He's talking specifically to the current
so
Mac OS experience.
I mean, you can solve these are all solvable problems. Well, but what you really and maybe he just doesn't want to say we see the world as a touch first. We see a touch first future, and we don't think the Macintosh. We should modify the existing Macintosh as much as create a new platform, which we've done. And we just need to get that new platform up to the point where it could do everything a Mac can do.
And which they have. I mean, Microsoft's greatest advantage is that they didn't win mobile, and they could put everything behind making Windows 10. Where at Apple, even if they wanted to make a touch-first operating system, they still have to ship iOS 11, right. iOS 12. Right.
And I don't know if a touch-first – do we really want a touch-first Mac? By the time they can do a touch-first Mac – I mean, it was that. Look, there were 5 years of pain in Windows 8. That was not a good experience. Maybe Apple could do better than that, but I'm not convinced they can. Taking an indirect input OS and turning it into a direct input OS is clearly not as good a solution as a ground up touch first OS. And Apple.
And where
has
will
that.
iPad Pro be in 5 years when they could spend the time on that?
So what we really need, and I'm sure Apple's working as fast as their little feet can carry them, is to make the iPad Pro more and more do the things. And I, by the way, I'm one of the people who's skeptical when I hear you. Oh, you'll be able to develop software and design graphics on an iPad Pro. But then I look at something like the Surface Studio, which is just really a giant tablet, right? And I think, I guess in time I'll get used to it. I'm just kind of nostalgic for a desktop PC. But why do you need a laptop?
You can imagine an iMac running a big version of iOS that you could fold down and touch and pencil on.
Like that's what the Surface Studio is, right? You're looking like this, and then you put it down, and
it's good. It's also good to notice that as far as I'm concerned, all the real limitations of the iPad Pro that prevent it from it prevents it from being used as a professional computer, but make it a pain in the butt to use it as a professional computer. They're all software. The hardware is fine. The platform is fine. All Apple has to do is find an easy way to get files in and out of it, for instance. All they have to do is to spend 3 months dropping acid in an ashram and come out saying, okay, here are the rules for keyboard usage of iOS apps. And even if they got the deposit for an extra month and come out and say, okay, now we've also figured out how you can use a mouse or trackpad with iOS. I mean, all these things that are kind of, again, make it difficult I'm going to be in LA all next week. And as usual, when I'm leaving for more than a couple of days, I'm thinking, okay, let's make this decision. Are we going to risk taking only iOS devices, or do we have to take a MacBook just to make sure we've got all bases
covered?
But just
because you can do that. We may not be there yet doesn't mean that we won't get there.
Oh, no, exactly. But what I'm saying is that that's encouraging. I don't think that Apple has to reinvent anything.
Right.
Just like the iPhone didn't have certain key features when it was first released, it eventually got, this bizarre thing called cut, copy, and paste. But they didn't have to release a brand new iPhone to add this feature. If Apple decided to do something super controversial and say, we're going to drop the Mac, we're going to make the case that the iPad is good for anybody who's using a MacBook Air right now. They wouldn't have to create new hardware necessarily. They would just have to create new software. Software is always an impressive project, but it doesn't mean that you have to hire, you have to build new factories or train new build stuff and figure out how to manage your component flow in order to do it. You just have to ship bits and it will work. So there's a lot of great future in this.
It's also Apple following the kind of fundamental tenets of the great thinkings of Steve Jobs. He's, learn to say no. You don't have to let multiple lines proliferate, focus. And so, yes, of course, Apple has the money, the resources, the ability to make a touch-first Mac OS. That's not the question. But it does seem like they're following that Steve Jobs tenet where you just, focus, say no to other products, have a streamlined product line, and trust that in the long run you're going to give consumers what they want. Today, they're unhappy. today they're unhappy. But
there's that really famous Phil Schiller slide that they've made into it. They since made into a T-shirt. You can get it at Infinite Loop. And it's that it's the job of the Apple Watch team to make an Apple Watch so good people don't need their iPhones. And the job of the iPhone team to make an iPhone so good people don't need their iPads. And an iPad so good people don't need their Macs. And it's the job of the Mac team to make a Mac so good people want it despite, you know, whatever the iPad or the iPhone or the Apple Watch is doing. And that sometimes jockeys back and forth. Sometimes one of them gets a lead on the other. And I think this is one of those things where they're trying to conceive of what the next generation of Mac looks like.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I understand, and I want the most powerful laptop money can buy. And I want it to be thin and light and have 24-hour battery life. It'd be nice to have touch, sure. And I'm not, and again, I'm working in a vacuum because I don't know if that touch bar suits. My issue with the touch bar, as I mentioned, kind of alluded to before the break, is if you're a touch typist, you don't look at the, you're looking at your screen, you're not looking at the keys, and you can't do that with a touch bar. So the touch bar is kind of the negative of a touch screen, which is without, I mean, it, you're touching something, but you don't know what it's going to be until you look at it.
And it changes, it's dynamic.
And it changes. Yeah. So I'm nervous about it, and I have no idea what it's going to be like because I don't, you know, I haven't been able to try it. So
it all depends on execution. I think that if it becomes, if I think that the litmus test of the touch bar is going to be, they should have a version of this in the engineering room where someone has taken a piece of gaffer tape and covered it, just absolutely covered that touch bar. If there's something you can't do now, then you need to rethink that piece of software because it has to be completely optional. Like you, it's not a problem for touch typists until there is something that I have to touch on the touch bar to make something happen. And it has to be something where it's not going to be the sort of thing where I'm going to be naturally sort of leaning back and about to grab my mouse to find something in a menu. So long as it becomes a shortcut option, I think that there's nothing but upside. If it becomes I don't have the ability to look at this section of the keyboard or feel this key, then I think that's a point of failure. And I hope that Apple has put in safeguards to make sure that doesn't happen once this is released into the wild.
Yeah.
The only thing that saved me, like, so I had a lot, I used it, I didn't use it long enough. And in the time I was using it, it took me a while to get used to it because it, for example, does suggestions the same way your iPhone keyboard does predictive suggestions. But on an iPhone, I'm looking at the screen and the keyboard at the same time, so I don't have to move at all. And with this, I didn't need the suggestions because I'm typing fast enough that the word is finished by the time I notice
that, I that there's find a suggestion very interesting. There. Yeah.
But some stuff is helpful for, like going through the, like as silly as it sounds, going through the emoji picker was quick. The escape key being the furthest left key is what saved it for me because that is the only function that if it's not a shortcut, like that is an absolute, you have to have it. But because it's a side, you can actually feel where it is. Like you just know the escape key is there. It doesn't feel like a key, but there's something above this row of keys and I know it's going to be the escape key. So you can hit it when you need it. The stuff that I really liked is the stuff like the palettes where it takes things from Adobe or it takes things from Final Cut and it puts them down there because I just don't remember enough shortcuts and they're different in every program and I don't use half the, I still use the mouse to drag up and look at the menu and type in search to find commands because I don't live in one app all day. I live in 30 apps for different periods of time. So being able to see stuff that was helpful and suggested there, I just learned to glance down as I was using it. And that part I really liked. But it's going to take me a good couple of weeks to decide if I really like it or not.
Yeah. What I really would have loved to see is something that Adobe has been doing with companion apps for its desktop apps, which is to say that if you're using your Mac, you're probably not using your iPad. So why not make that into an input device for the app you're using on your Mac? And if Apple decided to make an OS level solution that so that third party apps, they could broadcast to the app that, oh, by the way, this person has a phone or an iPad mini or an iPad Pro that is now docked and designated as both an output device and as an input device. Now, here's an area that you can now put your own tool palettes and your own buttons as controlled by the app. That would be pretty damn hot. That might even keep me into Mac laptops for a long time more because there's so many people who, if you've already invested in a MacBook, you probably have a phone and you might even have an iPad. And one of the reasons why it's a cheap thing to have a dual display thing is that I paid $1,000 for this iPad Pro, but I also bought a really cool 13-inch portable second monitor for my Mac setup. So that's I think that the touch bar is interesting. It conceptually, I think it'd be more interesting to be able to have the second screen somewhere that is not going to be, I can drag a window there and now that's where my Twitter is. But I can expect that if I want to do something that feels like a shortcut, or if I want to switch between 8 different font styles and see representations of those font styles, instead of having to pursue a drop down and hope I pick the right one, here is a panel that is designed to be my custom keyboard for Microsoft Word styles, or here's my palette picker, or here's my tool picker. That's the sort of stuff that I would love to see.
It kind of along the lines of what you're talking about, Renee, I think that the secret, maybe a surprisingly useful app, is auto correction on the touch bar. And yeah. The reason I'm thinking this is I read an article this morning in The Atlantic that was hysterical. Chinese characters are futuristic. The alphabet is old news. this is a guy named Tom Mullaney. He's a historian of modern China. He has a collection of Chinese typewriters and keyboards. And he says, in fact, China has an advantage here, even though for years they didn't. In other words, in order to send a telegram, look at this keyboard. In order to sell a telegram in China, you had to send all these. It cost them 4 times more to send a telegram because you had to send so much more information. But with autocorrect, and he talks about Chinese T9. Let me see if I can find it here. With autocorrect, for instance, T9, which remember the old entering texts from the number pad on your phone? There was this thing called T9, which would predict what you were going to do. It turns out it works really well in China because it's stroke-based. And you can see, if you look carefully, the yellow strokes on the 7, 8, 9 key. What happens is you enter the first few strokes. Average Chinese character is 9 strokes. That's a lot. But you enter the first few strokes. The phone is very quickly able to guess the character. And the character is a whole word. So autocorrect in China is actually extremely powerful, extremely sophisticated, because they needed to solve this issue of having hundreds of thousands of letters, of characters. And an average Chinese speaker might use 10 to 80,000, you know, really sophisticated of 90,000. There's a lot of characters. They solved this problem. They had to solve this problem. And autocorrect may actually solve this problem for the QWERTY keyboard. It's actually now less efficient than the Chinese predictive keyboards. It blew my mind. It's just the one article, but it made me start thinking about, you know, we've gotten used to having autocorrect on our mobile devices. Mm-hmm. What if you had really smart autocorrect on your keyboard? You'd have to rethink how you type, obviously, as we have with our mobiles. But it could actually really change the efficiency of our typing.
It's been on macOS for a while, and I find it works really well unless you type anything that's different than the norm. Like if you're dealing with any vocabulary set that's substantially different. Absolutely.
It has to get smarter.
And shout out to Dean Hachimovich, who invented both autocorrect and the Internet Explorer browser.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty cool. do you know him?
No, but I saw him arguing with Don Melton on Twitter, and it was hilarious.
whatever he says, I'd agree with if he invented that.
Yeah. It's going to be more interesting to see something like Siri and Cortana and Google Assistant as input devices, so to speak, where you now say, okay, insert my address, or reply to this one by saying that I can make it, but I'm going to be a little bit late. And it's not, I can make it, but I can be a little bit late. It will go through all the stuff you've actually typed to compose things that don't need the personal touch. The ability to just simply say, here is a message that actually pulls out the information you need, or something that will pre-flag and put on your desk for your signature, so to speak, replies to certain emails.
Well, you could start seeing machine learning and artificial intelligence getting really useful in this. And that's what Google does now with Inbox, and they're doing with the Allo Messenger. They're starting to offer canned responses. So Allo Messenger is really interesting because I'll get a text from somebody and it will suggest maybe you'd like to answer one of these three things, and I put a button underneath, and it's uncanny. And it's much deeper than just autocorrect what's the next word. It's kind of understanding what the question is and providing a response based on your previous responses. It's quite good.
The role of the keyboard has always been not for typing, but to tell the computer what you want. You know, what do you want this computer to do for you? And now that's such a broad thing. I was standing outside a American Asian restaurant, and they had like flat, like a decorative band of flags like outside the restaurant, and I could sort of recognize it, but I didn't know what country it represented. And I took out my phone, my Android phone. I was about to Google like I think this is a Korean restaurant, so maybe it's the flag of Korea. So I Google for images of the flag of Korea, and then I realized that, oh wait a minute, the camera app in Android, the stock camera, is tied into Google Now, so I could simply launch the camera app, put the flag in the live view, hold down the home button, and then 4 seconds later, and identify that this is the flag of the country and hear details about that country. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about keyboard replacements. It's not just about predictive text. It's about, well, what does the user want to do? Is there an easier way to help them out without forcing them to actually, you know, use their language skills?
Yeah. Wouldn't it be interesting? I mean, maybe that's the end game on this OLED, is to actually become a artificial intelligence.
If that were a dedicated window into Siri, where right. this is where Siri never goes away, and I could do things like, now I can have a conversation with Siri, and Siri will ask me questions back or give me right. candidates of, well, I could, you're available at these four times. There are buttons for times and dates. I can tap that. If it were less of a, here is a screen that can have lots of different things in it, you don't know what it is, as opposed to every time you want assistance on something, the interaction is going to be here. This is where they live. This is the open office door between you and your assistant's desk outside. And when you yell, Becca, where am I going in 2 hours? Becca.
It says task marker.
I pay you to screen these people.
Let's take a break. More coming up. Andy Iannacco, Chicago Sun-Times from iMore. .com. It's Renee Ritchie. We're talking Apple. And now that you have Thunderbolt 3 ports on your new MacBook, you're going to want to start looking at cabling, and some really nice cabling from the Kings of Glass, Corning. You've all heard, you know, Corning Gorilla Glass. You might have even had some Corning ware when you were a kid at home. They sold that division, but they still make high-tech glass products like fiber optic cables. In fact, these great cables from the optical cables from Corning are thinner, they're lighter, they're stronger, and they're flexible than maybe what you used to think of as fiber optic cables. In fact, I remember the early days, 3 years ago, when we started putting fiber optic cables in the Brick House studio, where it was all sorts of caution. You know, they said, don't step on them. We actually hung them from the ceiling so nobody could touch them. Now you can step on them, you could tie them in a knot, you could tie them in a bow. I mean, these things, you can crimp them. They take a twisting. Actually, I should say they take a bend. It has to rhyme, right? Take a bending, and they keep on sending. These things are amazing. With apologies to John Cameron Swayze. So what they've done is they've got this, and it's, you see how small it is. This little, at one end, at each end, they have this little adapter that takes the Thunderbolt or USB 3.0 connector, turns the RF, the copper, into light. It's got a sender, and it's, I don't know how they got it this small. So that's part of the innovation, is this little tiny transceiver that turns, there you go, that's the insides of it, that turns the copper signal into optical signal. And then it can send it over these very thin, light optical wires at great distance, at full speed, no attenuation. Cable runs for Thunderbolt of 200 feet. 200 feet! That's two-thirds of a football field. With no attenuation. For USB 3, 165 feet. So it's easy to move noisy, space-consuming devices away from your workspace. Here, I'll give you an example. Universal Audio, they make very high-end sound interfaces, Thunderbolt sound interfaces used in professional recording studios and so forth. They use optical cables by Corning to get acoustic isolation. They take the they could test equipment, and they move the noisy stuff out. Instead of investing on multiple extenders and adapters and cables, turn to optical cables by Corning to establish the connection you need with one simple long-length cable. Now that you got Thunderbolt 3 on your new MacBook, you're going to want some nice Thunderbolt 3 arrays. But why, you know, put them in the closet. They can be as far as 200 feet away. Optical cables by Corning. You can get them at Apple stores and all major electronics and professional AV retailers, Amazon, B&H. Optical cables by Corning. Longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to opticalcablesbycorning.com to learn more. And we thank Corning so much for their support of Mac Break Weekly. I'm gonna start working on them to say, make these a Type-C, dongle-free But for now, I mean, I use them all the time. I have a Drobo Thunderbolt Drobo that I connect to my iMac using the optical cables by Corning. It's awesome. It's way down, you know, way, it's under the desk, so I don't hear it. Opticalcablesbycorning.com if you want to learn more. And we thank you so much for your support, Corning, of Mac Break Weekly, and for making these awesome cables. You can bend it and extend it. It takes a twisting and it keeps on spritzing. I don't know.
Bend it, shape it any way you want.
Anyway, actually, I'm not going to sing that anymore. Isn't that a Southwest Airlines is using that now for their ads? And you see them all over the football and the baseball. And,
Helps people have expectations on the comfort of their seats.
Anyway, you want. All right. Siri, have you guys tried that now in Sierra? Or do you use it? I never find myself using it.
Yeah, me neither.
I use it for things. So there, what I find that Siri is good for is to help me with my essential laziness. Like, for example, on iOS, sometimes I just don't want to type a lot, so I'll dictate. Like, if I want to do an article idea, I'll just dictate it quickly to notes. And even if it's not 100%, I remember the gist. And on macOS, like if I don't want to drill through a directory structure and I remember enough about a document that I don't remember exactly where it is, I can just say, you know, yo, shindig, find me this. And a lot of times it pulls it up, or just weather or any sort of bit of information that I'm too lazy to click through, it'll provide me. Right. And in that sense, and it's persistent. What I like is it doesn't go away like it does on iOS. It'll stay there and you can reference it. So if I'm typing, I can just say, look this up for me, glance at it, type it, keep typing. And you can even pin it in Notification Center. So if you want it persistently to be there, every time you swipe notification, it'll be able to refer back to it. So it's still not fully developed. You can't do HomeKit or some other things with it yet. But they did give it some really nice, very Mac-centric features.
Yeah.
Settings. Settings are great, too. I don't want to have to go look for a settings panel. I just tell it to toggle the setting. The other day, I was watching a video, and I just said, turn on subtitles. And my friend was blown away. It's like, it takes me forever to find that every time. And it just, those kind of things, it's really helpful for.
Well, you know, I have now the Google Home. I have, of course, I've had Amazon Echoes in every room of the house practically, or the Dots, and Siri's everywhere, and, you know, my phone. And I love it, but I just never think of using it, you know. And it's like, you almost have to train yourself to use it more often.
Yeah, that's the problem of a lot of features that have been in software we've been using for years, and we just didn't know it because we haven't gone looking for it, or we're not in the sort of workflow in which it's relevant.
Right, or your muscle memory is you press Command Space and you type in the spotlight, you know.
Yeah, and it's like, because I'm joking about like yelling at Becca in the next room, but I have Alexa in the next room for anything that I would typically use a Siri for. I will just literally say, Alexa, what's the weather in New York City in 2 days? And because it's just how I'm trained to do it, I kind of, oddly enough, if Siri could work via the keyboard, I would be using it all the time because I use Spotlight all the time.
Oh, so, you can't type function or something?
You can. You hold it down. The same thing does Spotlight. You hold it down for a few seconds and Siri will pop up.
Okay.
But that's the difference. It's like I still have to speak what I want to do. Whereas for years I've been trained in Spotlight to search. That's my application launcher. It's the easiest
Me
way
too.
For me to launch anything. Yeah. But I would easily hit Command Space and then type, do I have any appointments next Tuesday afternoon? And then just have it simply speak it or say or read it out to me. It's for some reason, and this is my brain. This is not like I don't think this is a feature deficiency of Siri. For some reason, my brain has not said press Command, hold down Space, and then ask Siri to do something. Because when I deal with that's how I ask questions of people, and I don't like press on their ear, put your thumb on their nose, and then say, "Are we driving together, or are we going to be taking separate cabs over there?" And then listen for the answer. So I'm just not trained to do
that. I got to try this. Carl RJ
Every year I do an article saying, please just conflate Siri and Spotlight already, because there was just type on webOS and BlackBerry had something similar. And Google Assistant shows it too. Like sometimes I just can't speak or don't want to speak. And I should have the same query engine regardless of my input medium. I should be able to type into it, speak into it, you know, do hand signals if their AI gets smart enough. But I just want that to be one system that I can query.
I've talked to Apple about this and they're really adamant about how Siri is a voice thing. It's not a type in thing, and I don't understand. I don't know if that's dogma or if that's something about how the system.
You can do
created.
It though. If you ask Siri something and it answers, you can go edit what you asked, and you can type in anything you want, and it will tell you. It's just
Just take some of the code from the Newton message pad, which still works great. It's schedule an appointment with Larry at next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Then, okay, it's my job.
I can't do that yet. It seems like I should be able to do that.
You can do it in Siri. I don't think you can do it from Spotlight.
Oh.
You can't. There's no way to type it in unless you're using a third party.
Maybe there's somebody should write a little text to Siri thing of some kind.
Maybe I can do it if this then that rule in which I will have it talk to Alexa and then Alexa schedule something.
The sound of that is something quite atrocious.
Whoa. That was funny. I'm sorry. RJ said he said supercalifragilisticexpialidocious to Siri. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
The sound of that is something quite atrocious.
And he didn't get that at all. He got it. What did you say that Siri said? You said Siri translated that into some crazy for califragilis stick XP halitosis. So that's. It might be a pronunciation. Maybe are you Scottish there?
But sometimes they have several quippy little comments.
Well, that's one of them. Yeah, yeah. I guess it's just muscle memory. It's just training me to press and hold command space a little longer, and then say something.
And actually, could be something that the touch bar can help you out with by not necessarily always being keys, but also being, hey, do you realize that you can do this? Or watching what you're doing and saying, oh, the next time, just say
that would
this.
Be useful. Hey, I noticed you typed this, but you know you could ask Siri to do that. That would be useful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think something does that. Maybe Cortana. Somewhere I've seen that.
Cortana is one of my favorite things about Windows 10. Even though I'm not even a daily or rarely a weekly Windows user, just the ability to have a window that's here that will just take my questions and do stuff with them, and the ability to type into them, as well as having voice if I want it. That's pretty darn cool. Although I haven't installed it on the devices that it's available for, so that says everything about it.
In other news, Apple News, 70 million users. That's kind of I used it a lot during the election cycle.
Yeah.
In fact, I kind of miss it on Android. I haven't found a kind of, and it's funny because I really, really complained about Apple News when it first came out. But it's gotten better and better, I think. And not because I'm training it, but just because I think Apple's gotten better.
They're investing heavily in it.
Yeah. And so now it's a great news aggregator, first source news aggregator for me. 70 million users. That's, I don't know, is that a lot given how many iPhones are out there? I guess it's pretty good.
It's really pretty though. I hope that this is that the future of iOS is going to take its design cues off of how pretty this news app works. I've been sort of deeply immersive in the iOS iPhone 7, and so I'm trying to do as much things as possible with it. And it's like all the blandness of stock iOS, all of the utilitarian stuff. My God, is there things? There are words that are really, really thick, and there are colors here, and it's very, very pretty. It really gets you excited about some of the design work that Apple's putting into their iOS apps.
There's a rumor that someone on Eddie Q's team just had an idea for this design, and they let him go with it. So all the Eddie Q apps, which is news and music, and I think Home. I'm not sure, but Home has the same. The bigger, brighter, more.
I like it.
More beautiful or something. Design language.
Yeah. Renee, how much is a good cup of coffee in San Jose? $7, $6?
Yeah, it's a lot.
You Instagram a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah.
I'll put that money in an envelope and mail it to one Infinite Loop with the person who came up with this design that apparently and enough for a muffin for Craig for letting him run with it because I absolutely love it.
By the way, 70 million is up from 40 million last year. So that's almost doubled in size. And now Apple, remember, killed iAds. They have now done a deal, weird, with NBC Universal to sell in-app ads on Apple News. Can somebody explain that to me? This comes from a Recode. Publishers who put content on the app, of course, could still sell their own ads and will keep 100% of the revenue. But if there's remaining ad inventory, instead of Apple selling it, NBC Universal will sell it. And just like Apple, will keep 30% of the revenue.
See, I'm probably out of the loop on this, but I just assumed that was like a Googly Bing Yahoo sort of a thing. And I never even considered that NBC Universal would be an ad partner for something like this.
Well, you know, and when we talked about it yesterday on iOS Today, I said, well, that can't be NBC Universal. It must be Comcast, their parent company, because does NBC Universal have a big division of salespeople. Apparently, they're going to create a dedicated sales group just for this purpose.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's a strange
I think the huge
deal.
Advantage they I think the huge advantage news and why we see the uptick is when app news was like this big secret project at Apple and nobody knew about it. At the same time, they were making this minus one home screen Siri smart thing and nobody knew about it. So you had news in there, you had news in news, you had news in Safari, and they never sort of worked all together. And now it's all unified. So if you go to that, you go to that widget screen, you see the news widget there. If you go to the news app, you see it. You get it's all in one, like it's all sort of one system wide thing now. And that for publishers, like it's not easy out there. The ads are getting worse. The revenue from them are getting worse. From mobile, it's terrible because a lot of people don't convert on mobile. Like they'll browse around in mobile, but then they'll still go home on their computer and put up 19 tabs and check every single different version of whatever it is they want to buy. So I don't know if this will be an improvement, but we're getting to a world where we live with AMP and we live with Facebook Instant and we live with Apple News, and we're no longer in control of our own presentation layers.
It's nice to have one button to push and you get the news. And they've aggregated a lot of sources. And they're driving a lot of traffic, according to Nyman Lab, which studied Apple News readership. CNN says its Apple News content got 36.5 million unique readers in September. Now, of course, this number is going up because of the election. But that's a big increase even from August of 5 million, 5 to 36 million. Page views increased from 43 million in August to 274 million. That's partly because of this election, but they also say the notifications started working after the iOS 10 redesign. And the I have to admit, I do see the notifications from Apple News, and that does tend to pull me into those articles.
Yeah, I rediscovered it when I found news and swipe left, and just like with Google now, it will hook you the first time that it finds something that you didn't know about that you're interested in, and then that sort of trains your brain to I'm going to swipe left now to see if there's anything interesting going on right now.
Everybody,
so it's definitely getting better.
In the news biz, though, is acknowledging that some of this bump comes from the election, and actually everybody in the news biz is very worried about tomorrow. That people are just going to stop reading the news, and it.
Oh, there'll be fallout for at least a week.
Maybe it'll take a little while, but this has happened in previous election cycles. Is people get very interested, they follow the news much more closely, and then after the election's over, it's over. And
don't they run again? I mean, it seems to me the U.S. election takes a good 3 years.
They're going to start soon, I think. For
also
I know, right?
They're going to start soon. Oh my God!
Also keep in mind that if anybody who is in the news knows that. We have an unprecedented situation in which if the person who is well behind and can only by a miracle win this election loses, they have not promised they will accept the results of the election. So there's probably going to be reasons for people to deepen that. And the good thing is they're not just giving you news about the election. They're also, oddly enough, one of the things that got me into Google now was when it first said, oh, by the way, I noticed that you've been doing searches on Bob's Burgers. Next week, there's a new episode. Like, oh, that's great. I thought that was a rerun. Thank you.
Well, they're smart. Both the New York Times, the Washington Post, I see McClatchy. They've all dropped their paywalls for today, hoping to attract a big audience who might stick around in future. And I admit, I decided that Washington Post did such a good job with its coverage that I decided to subscribe to it to support Jeff Bezos, who apparently, I'm sure he's running at a deficit, has just decided, this is my duty as a mogul to support journalism. And,
each billionaire should buy one paper of record and just
patronize it. And not mess with it. Not do what Shelley is doing with that. Sheldon Adelson is doing in Las Vegas. Not mess with it, but say, I'm going to create a firewall between my opinion and your news coverage, but I will support you. And, Bezos has built a beautiful new offices for the Washington Post, gone heavily digital. It's $10 a month subscription.
Yeah.
But I feel like, I want to support. I want in my little way to do what Bezos has done in a big way, which is support good journalism.
I subscribe to the New York Times, but for completely selfish reasons. It's just that it's real journalism. It's an immense amount of content. Sunday, I am now one of those.
That's
Woody
the only
Allen
print one I get. The only print newspaper I get is Sunday Times.
Yeah, it's like I get no work done because after I read my morning comics, it's like, okay, let's see what's in the Sunday edition. And I'm just reading. And I don't think I can afford to pay $10 a month for every newspaper, every magazine that I want. But New York Times is it's not just once again, I have to change all my credit card numbers for a card that again, I got a new card in the mail after not knowing that something had been going wrong. But it was like I noticed it because, oh, I can't get access to the New York Times. I got to do that right now, right
yes.
now, because I want to read the stuff that's going on right now.
No, and so I feel like it's almost charity in a way. I have my charitable causes. I send money to Wikipedia and Doctors Without Borders
it's
every
patronage.
Month and EFF.
A
little patronage to the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. The Journal of the Times and the Washington Post.
If that's the reason why you're doing it, I'm a print journalist. Send
money directly to me. Hey, if the Chicago Sun-Times, I'd be glad to send them $10 a month as well. Bloomberg also benefited from the Apple News update. Unique visitors to its Apple News content spiked 500% in October, and that's also because it got into the top stories.
That's just German. That's the German bump.
That's the German bump. I think you're right. The German bump. Wow. He's paying for himself there. I hope Mark got a big deal at Bloomberg because he's paying for himself up there.
I've seen him twice since then, and he was smiling both times.
Yeah, I bet he's smiling.
what kind of shoes is he wearing?
It just shows, okay, maybe journalism in trouble, but some forms of journalism, journalism, lots of money to be made.
Journalism has never been in trouble because it's a product that everybody wants
everybody
and needs
wants
and willing
it.
To pay for. The question is, how do you get them to pay for it, and
exactly.
what are they willing to pay for? That's the only thing that's changed.
No, you're exact. Monetization is the challenge. Exactly right.
Yep. And it's like people like Gruber and German. It's not like their names. It's not that their audiences. It's because they consistently do great work, do great journalism.
Right.
That's why someone like German is going to get headhunted by Bloomberg and is going to get a really good offer. And that's why Gruber can have Gruber Crunchberry cereal and sell 10 million units a day if he wanted to, because he's just does such a good job of what he does.
A couple of people in the chat room wondering, Carl, RJ, and Jonna, why we do not have Apple News on the Mac yet.
Or outside the U.S., U.K., and Australia.
Oh, that's right. It's only in the U.S. Well, it's English-speaking, maybe. I don't know.
Because the Mac is old news.
The Mac is old news. Why?
No, they'll get there. We got the other apps. Apple, and again, some people hate this about them, but they really want to think about the use case. It's like, we don't have it on Apple TV yet. And they're thinking about it. Is it a video only? Does it strip out all the video from your news feeds and just show you that? And how do we present it? And when it's on the Mac, like, it took a while to get iBooks there. And they're like, I don't think they did a great job bringing iBooks to the Mac, frankly. But sometimes they think about, like, how are we going to use this? How are we going to present it to you? And then whatever development budget they have, it gets slotted into that, that pipe. And maybe next.
Well,
here we get it.
In fact, one of the reasons I'm bringing up news and the success of news is to contrast it with TV, Apple TV's TV app, which poses the same potential of being the place you go when you open your Apple TV. You just go right to TV because all the stuff you want to watch is there, but they haven't made the right content deals yet. And, you can't see everything you want to watch, so you're still stuck going from app to app on the Apple TV.
And it's U.S. only, which is only, it's a huge percentage of their customers, but it couldn't be the primary interface. It's like the Siri remote only works in a few countries.
Right.
So in other countries, it's called the Apple remote.
Right. So,
but it would be a great way to at least get people to get hooked on the new service. If the screensaver were Apple News, if the default thing for the screen to do when it realizes that I'm not paying attention to it or I'm not in the office is that I'm going to be the lobby screen kiosk that simply says, here are interesting things that might want to grab your attention. It's not the reason why I would use Apple News, but it would click me into that app and give me a reliance on it and then maybe trick me into seeing ads.
I kind of buried the lead here. I think the most interesting story of the week was this Steve Jobs email from 2010, a year before his death. And we got it because of the Samsung lawsuit. This was revealed last week as part of the discovery. And this is Apple's, suit against Samsung over smartphone patents. And it outlined his strategy for Apple going forward. And this, it turns out, was the agenda for Apple's annual Top 100 meeting later this year. And I don't know if you guys have read it yet. Let me just kind of...
I think it leaked a few years ago because I remember reading
before?
3 years ago.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I take it back then.
No, it's a fascinating read.
2011 strategy. 1. Who are we? That's good. I like it. Headcount, average age, VP count, percent new membership at this meeting. What do we do? The questions are interesting. Post-PC era, Apple is the first company to get here. Remember, this is 2010. Post-PC products, now 66% of our revenues. iPad, outsold Mac within 6 months. Post-PC era equals more mobile, smaller, thinner, lighter, plus communications, plus apps, plus cloud services. Now, this one maybe not so good. 2011, holy war with Google.
Well, he tried.
He tried. All the ways we will compete with them. Primary reason for this meeting. You will hear about what we're doing in each presentation. 2011, he declared the year of the cloud. We invented the digital hub concept. PC is hub for all your digital assets. I remember asking, who was it? I think it was Craig Barrett of Intel at a CES 10 years ago, what the future of the PC was in a coming post-PC era. He said the same thing. He may not be Apple invented this, but probably around the year 2005, he said, well, it's the hub. It's the hub mm-hmm. for everything. I don't think we see that anymore, do we? I don't think that's actually what the PC is anymore. Mm-hmm. PC now, just another client. Jobs continues. Alongside iPhone, iPad, iPad Touch, Apple is in danger of hanging on to an old paradigm too long. I think by which he means desktop. The innovator's dilemma. Google and Microsoft are further along on the technology, but they haven't quite figured it out yet. Tie all of our products together so we further lock customers into our ecosystem. And then he got this one off a little bit. 2015, new campus.
That stuff's fudgeable.
Yeah, 2 years. You know what? That's something that ambitious.
iPhone 4 Plus is fun, too.
Yeah. iPhone 4 Plus with better antenna. I guess he realized the problem. Processor, camera, and software to stay ahead of competitors to mid-2012. LTE, mid-2012. Low-cost iPhone model based on iPod Touch to replace 3GS. So he's already talking about the bifurcated iPhone strategy that Apple later implemented and still does with the SE. But the 5C, I think, was the first of those.
Yeah, the 5C, yeah.
So at this event, this is his agenda. Show Droid and RIM ads, Verizon iPhone, business and competitive update, iPhone 5 hardware, confidential. I guess, is that redacted Siri. Or what? I don't know what that is.
Probably just Siri.
Siri? Oh, maybe. And then talking about the iPad, ship iPad 2 with amazing hardware and software before our competitors even catch up with our current model.
And they did. I mean, the iPad 2 came out, and then the HP touchpad, and right. It was
garbage.
Not pretty.
Garbage. Yeah. iOS strategy, catch up to Android, where we are behind. And they did. Notifications, check. Tethering, check.
Oh, there's Siri.
Speech, check. And leapfrog them, Siri, .. I love reading this kind of stuff because, you know, as we've been following this roadmap for the last 6 years, and it's interesting to see how much of this roadmap actually was set by Steve, how much he understood when it comes to mobile media strategy, catch up to Google Cloud services and leapfrog them. Didn't quite do that with photo stream and cloud storage. Deeply integrates Google Cloud services, way ahead of Apple, Google apparently, in cloud services for contacts, calendars, mail. I would argue still are. Make Apple ecosystem even more sticky. What was Telluride? Was that a hardware or software?
I think that's one of the iOS's, but I'm not positive. Okay. They're all named after ski resorts.
Right.
This does help out anybody who's about to say, oh, well, Apple doesn't care about this or Apple.
They're thinking about all this.
On this. Exactly. Even if they don't necessarily translate everything they're thinking about into a working product or talk about things, I do think that this is an era in which, even if it's against their will, they have to talk a little bit more about their plans and why they make certain decisions. I think that we're seeing a lot didn't Phil give a long talk to somebody about
recently
the Independent.
About here's the decisions that went into the new MacBook. Here is right. why we had to do the things that we had to do. Whereas I think if 3 or 4 years ago, that would have been much more rare and much more of a news event in and of itself, because they usually at that time they would let the product speak for itself. But it's no good. Things they can lose control.
I feel
the story
like when Phil Schiller talks speak. Now, they should bill him as an Apple surrogate. I really feel like he's spinning. There's a lot of spin in what
for
Phil
marketing.
Said.
He's the marketing guy. Again,
exactly, that's his title, and he works for Apple. Yeah. It's not like he's a journalist. That would be a problem if he were a journalist.
I spent the last year investigating the Mac, and here's my finding.
By the way, you did iOS, you did iPhone, you did iPad, you did all of that, and then at the end, Item 7 on the list, Mac, and there's only 4 bullet points. Hardware roadmap, Lion Plan, Mac App Store, Final Cut Pro demo. Even in 2010, the Mac comes in. The only thing the Mac's higher than is Apple TV.
Which has more list items. But, I mean, Apple Mac was mostly... Oh, Telluride was iOS 5, Leo.
iOS 5, okay. Anyway, this is in QZ, and I apologize if we've seen it before. It's the first time I've seen it.
Oh, it's super fascinating. Yeah,
it's very fascinating.
Yeah, it's still fun. Yeah.
And this is why, by the way, this holy war with Google, which then eventually bled over into a holy war with Samsung, is ultimately a bad idea, because it's things like this that leak out in discovery.
It's great for us, though.
It's great for us.
Historians who love Apple, Samsung lawsuit showed us all the prototypes, so much.
Apple must have just be cringing, though, when I see it.
I keep saying it wouldn't be. I hope that even if Apple's not, you know, showing off prototypes of undeveloped and of unreleased products, I hope that there is like an oral history project internally. I hope there's a building or an office inside the new spaceship that is just for here is a copper lined box you can go into, in which you can say whatever you want about the history of this project, and it will be encrypted in such a way that that will check the International Atomic System clock so that it absolutely cannot be decrypted by anybody until 30 years from
fabulous.
Now.
Fabulous.
Because we see Andy Hertzfeldt's site that documents the history of the development of the Macintosh, and even there are no trade secrets anymore. But it's just fascinating to see the challenges that people have. I think all the people who are complaining about how Mac write, I can only get 7 pages in here, and I keep having to switch disks because there's only 1 floppy. Now, gee, they've in modern Twitter ease, they don't get it. They don't even care. It's like, no, we were so tight on memory inside there that we had a long argument about whether the OS should support rounded rectangles because we didn't know if we had enough space for the code.
Yeah, that's right.
So
right.
Please don't give us a hassle about 7-page limits.
Are we still thinking that Apple's going to do a display? I'm thinking now with the way they're promoting this LG display that they have decided,
display.
This is the display, right?
Yeah.
All right.
By the way,
the price drop,
I mean,
Apple would never
mind.
Sell a cinema display, a 5K cinema display under $1,000, but that's what they're doing with the LG. That's one of the reasons Apple's not in this business anymore. How are they going to compete?
Yeah.
You're not going to make an Apple 5K monitor for $954.
The logo alone costs you $500.
Yeah.
And they look good, right? I haven't got one yet, but
they look different. Like, so the only thing I noticed is when you saw them next to the MacBook, the screen was matte.
Yeah.
So the reflection was sort of not glossy, but whatever it is the MacBooks really are, like they're sort of like a sub-gloss surface, and these were matte. So they are P3, they are 4K and 5K, but from a distance, they look different than the MacBooks.
Yeah. Although a lot of people in general are begging for matte displays. So
yep.
Maybe that's the response. Should Apple try to steal Time Warner from under AT&T? There are some people saying they should, according to CNBC. People familiar
only if
with
Alex
the thinking
Lindsay can run it.
Yeah,
yeah.
People familiar with the thinking at the company say Apple's not interested. Current price $85.4 billion. Apple's concern, according to CNBC, is the regulatory issues of acquiring that big content company. This is from Squawk on the Street. I don't know. It's very tempting to think of Apple acquiring a big content company. Like
giant Superman statue.
Like Disney.
Loop.
It's just so tempting.
But who's going to run it? What's going to be the purpose of it? How is it going to enhance Apple's whole portfolio? And even Google has decided to get out of the wired connectivity business. As happy as people have been with Google Fiber, Google has decided that there's just no, we just don't want to be involved in laying cable throughout the and supporting physical infrastructure throughout the entire country. We can just figure out what exists about the infrastructure that we can address and we can fix and we can improve for ourselves, and we're going to do that. So I just don't know what it's the same problems as Apple selling a regular TV set, or same as Apple creating its own cable service. It's like, why would they want that kind of pain on themselves?
Yeah,
I mean, Sony bought Sony Studios.
Yeah, right. So. Yeah, so, and you saw what happened. Any credence to the rumor? I'm going to call BS on the rumor that there's going to be a jet white iPhone. You think that'll happen? to find.
I wonder, because the rumor is also that there won't be an iPhone SE update this spring. And I think the spring iPhone was more popular than Apple thought it would be.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised, because again, like, as a product gets bigger and as you soak up the addressable market, you start to do things to try to increase that. And if 6 months later you have new colors, that's a very common marketing strategy in mature products.
White's hard to do well. Yeah. Although the ceramic Apple Watch, I mean, if they made it as ceramic, I'd be really interested. But it would be pricey, I would guess.
Greg Koenig did a whole thing on producing, like, the Apple Watch is okay, producing at iPhone scale. And maybe it's like a limited edition or something. But like Andy said earlier, making a million of something is really hard.
Really hard. Yeah.
But it's it would be an interesting difference, because the ceramic Apple Watch costs a multiple more than the friendly version of it. The iPhone already costs a lot of people $800 or $900.
You can't charge $2,000.
I'm saying that a lot of those people, if you were to introduce them to a model that was dramatically different,
right?
Like, and you could charge, let's say, $200 more for it. And it's not just a color; it's a ceramic. Here's a shade of just offensively blue.
Right.
We're going to call it offensive blue. That is just hypnotic. You see it in the Apple store and you're like, that is
it needs to be more blue.
Beautiful. Yeah. How much more Sapphire. Blue could this be? And Sapphire the answer is none more blue.
Yeah.
So that would be interesting.
Well, and especially, I think ceramic is a very interesting material, because it's a glass, so it's transparent to radio waves, but it's tougher than metal.
And they said that Apple's been buying CNC machines at an unbelievable rate. And I think they own, I don't want to say all of them, but they own a vast amount of CNC machines. They'd have to buy so many kilns and get so much production ramped up that that supply chain would be leaking like a faucet.
But nothing. Oh, yeah. So we'd know by now is what you're saying.
Apple fires 3 million kilns in Shenzhen, China.
Yeah. What do you think the failure rate is on the Apple Watch, the ceramic Apple Watch? Do you think there's a...
I mean, they managed to ship it, and granted, in limited quantity, so it can't have been huge. But I think a jet white iPhone, if it's produced in the same aluminum chassis, it would still be a hot commodity. People have always liked white phones.
Yeah, whites. Yeah. All right, let's take a break. Your picks of the week coming up on Mac Break Weekly with Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Our show today brought to you by the place you should go to buy or sell your old iPhone, gazelle.com. You probably knew as soon as I said buy or sell. It's got to be Gazelle, GAZELLE.com. Gazelle has really made a name for themselves as the place to go when you want to get money for an old device. If you go there right now, you get a quote good for 30 days on a variety of old devices, your old iPhone, your old iPad. By the way, they even buy broken iPads or iPhones. You can also sell in bulk. So if you're a business and you have, you've upgraded your users and you got a bunch of old Blackberries, you should contact them. Gazelle is a great place for individuals and businesses to sell their old stuff, get a guaranteed 30-day lock-in, which means you have 30 days to decide. So if you've ordered an iPhone and you're waiting and you know you're going to get it in mid-November or late November or early December, fine, get a quote right now on your old iPhone so that when the time comes, you get the new one, you can copy the data over and then pack up the old one. Gazelle pays the shipping on anything worth more than a dollar. And you'll get paid fast. You can get a check, a PayPal credit, or, and I love this, the Amazon gift card, which they bump up 5%. Now, you might wonder, well, what happens to all those devices? The very best, highest quality devices, the ones that are in the best shape, the best iPhones, the 6s, the 6s Plus, the iPads, the Galaxy phones, you can buy on Gazelle for a very, very good price. Their certified pre-owned devices have all been run through their rigorous 30-day check to make sure they're completely functional and don't have any major cosmetic issues. Although, during that check process, they can say, we can see a slight, gentle signs of wear, they say. So we're going to charge you less for that. And you can choose. I want one that looks brand new, or I want one that maybe is slightly owned, but it's still in better shape than the one I'm replacing. Maybe you break your phone or you're getting a phone for a kid. Gazelle also offers financing on devices you buy by a firm, which you can do at checkout and get approved instantly, which really makes it easier to get that new device. 12-month warranty also available for cell phones and iPads powered by Assurant Solutions. And this is a warranty that covers not just hardware defects, but water damage, cracked screens. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. To buy and to sell, Gazelle. Fast, easy, friendly. Give a new life to use smartphones and other devices and save yourself a pretty penny at the boot, at the time, to boot, at gazelle.com. Time for our picks of the week. Andy Inaka, why don't you kick it off this week?
Mine is actually an oldie but a goodie. I've been using Snapseed a lot on the iPhone 7, and it's really become my favorite iOS photo editor. I love how it makes complex series of edits, what would be really, really kind of complicated to do in Lightroom or Photoshop, into just swipe left, swipe right, and in a top-down scrolling list of effects it can do, and then just simply move your thumb to the left or the right to adjust the intensity of that effect. And yet it's doing an amazing amount of intelligence behind the scenes with not only just the basic filters, but also things like it being able to understand that, okay, there's a human face in this shot. So I'm going to, if he asks me to brighten things up, I'm going to treat the face differently than I do the background. It's not an app for doing lots and lots of wacky effects. It's an app for taking the picture that you shot and making it look like what you remember that scene looking like. And this is something that I
is posted. This your shot?
Yeah, holy I actually cow. shot that with the iPhone 7 Plus. And I wanted to share. I thought that, well, of course, I'll come home and put this into Photoshop and then improve it. And then I got kind of like greedy and thought, oh, well, I want to post something just immediately. And I just, instead of going into Lightroom, I went into Snapseed. And I would, if you compared the original of that to what that looks like now, all the elements were there, but none of the color, none of the brightness is there, none of the liveliness. This is what I remember it looking like. This is not what the photo actually is. And I was able to do that in about like 3 minutes. It was just so, so quick. The other stuff, I just gave you a link to just that one shot. The other stuff I may or may not have done.
These are on Flickr at Andy I is his account on Flickr. Yeah.
But just showing you something that I would have assumed that, well, no, I'm doing photography. I want to adjust the tone of the tone of, no, this is actually giving me the exact results I wanted. And if you have a prejudice against Instagram from a few years ago, when it really was all about taking a really good picture and making it look like crap, it actually inspired me the new Instagram that, oh, actually, oftentimes I will do something in Instagram and then try to replicate it in Lightroom because Instagram got me to a place with the photo that I really wanted to find. Snapseed for me is the equivalent of, what if you are not you haven't been using Photoshop for years and years and years? What if you just said, I want the lights to be not brighter, but just have a little bit more contrast and be a little punchier? It's more like I have a list of things I can play with over the course of 3 or 4 minutes by simply just nudging that slider left and right, up and down. I will stop moving my thumb when it looks like how I want it to look like. And by the time you finish going through these filters, you have something that's really, really pretty. And it's not just for, you know, doing screen images. It will handle RAW. It will handle pretty much everything. It's for iOS and for Android. And they just keep adding things and adding things and adding things to it. It was a standalone app a few years ago. Google bought it. And they're clearly putting all kinds of resources into it. If you look at the they have, unfortunately, the official product page is a Google Plus page, but that's where they will. Oops. I know, but that's where they will show you. Here's all the stuff that every time they make an improvement to it, here's the stuff that we've added to it, and the number of things you can do with this, and also the number of things it's doing behind the scenes on your behalf. It's like I thought that I'm not quite ready to publish the photo version of my iPhone Plus 7 review yet, but I wanted to give you, here's an album of original pictures, and then, well, no one just posts original pictures, so what if I also show you what it would look like if I were to edit all of them? And I thought that, well, maybe I'll do it in Lightroom. No, that's not fair. Okay, well, maybe I'll use the standard Photos app, and that's good, but now I kind of want to do it all in Lightroom, so I can still say I'm doing this all on the device, but Lightroom, I think, does more than the Photos app can do, as good as the Photos app is. And it's also, I think, fulfills the mandate, you know, the brief of the Photos app better, where you don't have to know what any of these sliders do. You just can play with it until you get a picture that's much better than the one that you originally shot. So really, really happy with Snapseed, and it's really, really gone way up in my book.
Nice. I agree with you 100%. It's my top photo app on both Android and iOS.
As a tool for bamboozling people into thinking of more skill and better hardware than you actually have, I don't think it can be equaled.
That and Lightroom Mobile. And as Lightroom Mobile is coming on strong, I think in time that's going to be as good as Lightroom Desktop. And this is an example, going back to our conversation about touch versus desktop, of an app that really is still a critical app for me on the desktop. As it gets better and better on the iPad Pro, there may come a day when I don't need to use Lightroom and Photoshop on a desktop.
It's actually my preferred mode for editing photos, because the ability to simply I'm holding an 8x10 color glossy picture.
Right.
And I can actually make this print change under my hands. And I know I've got a screen here that's way bigger than the iPad Pro, but there's something about I'm holding this in my hand. This is in my lap. I'm holding a picture and I'm editing it. And I'll, to say nothing of the fact that I can do this wherever I go instead of just having to have a screen and a desk. I'm not as broken up about changes to the MacBook Pro as other people, because if Apple just keeps improving the iPad Pro, there might not be a need for me to have any laptop, Mac or Windows.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that's kind of the end game, or it's becoming clear that's going to be the end game for Apple.
Sad. With the iPad, you can buy any damn keyboard you want.
Yeah, I love the Mac, but yeah. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
I just want to echo Andy's thing first, because I love Snapseed and I love Lightroom Mobile, and I kind of love John Nax, and I think he had his hands in both of those things. So,
oh, interesting! I didn't know that.
He was the head of Photoshop and Lightroom products at Adobe for years and years and years, and then he moved to Google last year. Moved to Google last year, the year before.
Oh, interesting.
And I've had a lot of conversations about John that makes me think that it's not that
some Google's, photo love.
Every time you think, oh, thank goodness Apple is taking this seriously, it's like, no. They've hired someone who is now really the man or the woman who you really want in charge of this, because they are passionate about photography, or they're passionate about I don't know, bookkeeping or whatever.
Renee Ritchie, pick of the week.
So I felt super bad about recommending the AirPods only to have them not ship. But in the meantime, the PowerBeats 3 have shipped. I have the previous version of these. Trinity Caldwell got this version, and she's going to be reviewing them. But basically, this takes the PowerBeats and it puts the W1 chip in them. So you get the same kind of instant pairing, automatic propagation to all your devices. So if you pair them with your iPhone, automatically paired with your Apple Watch, over iCloud, it goes to your iPad and your Mac as well. If you have all those devices, it'll intelligently switch between them depending on which one it detects is doing the audio streaming at that point. And also for people who just don't like Apple's earbud design, because you know some people really just say it hurts their ears or it's not the right shape for their ears. These offer a real difference. These are quasi in-ear headphones, but they have the loop that goes around your ear, and they're really sort of made for working out. So you can put them on, throw the loop around your head, and I was doing rowing in them, I was doing running in them. I did a little bit of light grappling in them just to see if I could. And they stayed in really, really well. And, you know, some people like Beats, some people don't like Beats, but they sounded pretty good to me. And with the W1 chip, they just work so easily. So if you're desperate for AirPods, or you love the idea of the technology, but you just don't like the AirPod shape, then the PowerBeats 3 are something to check out.
Very nice. A couple of things for me to mention. We were talking about Linux, and people who use Linux know that you can run a lot of Windows software on Linux using something called Wine, which stands for Wine is not an emulator, although kind of it basically duplicates the Windows API. And many applications, including Microsoft Office, run very well on Linux. And I've often wondered, why isn't there a Wine for Mac? And I just wanted to point out, it's not there yet, but there is a new tool called Darling that is the same idea, Mac OS translation layer for Linux. At this point, you know, the project's pretty new. It doesn't yet run GUI Mac applications, so I'm not recommending at this point as something to use. But the good news is somebody's working on this, and if you want to get involved or support it, or just, you know, let them know you're interested in it, I think that would be fantastic. If you could run OS X executables on Linux, that would be one way to solve this whole issue. So we'll keep an eye on that. And you had mentioned in the past, I know you both loved Vesper. note taking app, which kind of went out of business, sad to say. There's an app that I haven't used very much yet on the Mac App Store that is a featured app today called Bear that will import your Vesper notebooks and give you a similar experience with some nice features. You can use Markdown if you want. We've seen enough notebooks now to know that, you know, this is a fairly crowded category. It's free, although with the pro version, you can sync via CloudKit so you can use it. It is available for iPad, iPhone, and Mac. And if you pay $15 a year or I think $2 a month, you have the ability to do sync across all your platforms, export to JPEG and PDF and a variety of other formats. And then they have some nice themes that you can choose from. But there's a free 1 month trial or 1 week trial right now. And you can do a lot of this for free. But one of the things I love, I'm a big fan of wikis. And this has a kind of a wiki-like feature. If I type a hashtag, this is a tag, into a document and hit return, it'll show up over here. So it's a very easy way to put kind of organize your stuff and put tags in it so you can quickly jump to a particular part of the writing. They say it's for both prose and notes. And I think it looks pretty nice. Markdown support. It has limited font support. Not all the fonts, not all the Mac fonts. I think it has a handful of fonts. Let's see here. I know it's here somewhere. I think Avenir is one of, yeah, Avenir Next, System, Helvetica New, and Menlo. So it's, you know, it's kind of the basic style fonts. I don't know if people are looking for a replacement for Vesper still, but if you are, at least this imports your Vesper files, yep, which would certainly save you a lot of time. Have you guys tried Bear yet? I think it's pretty new.
I got sucked into Apple Notes.
Yeah.
It was everywhere.
You know what?
Apple
Notes is really good. It's actually, especially with the geofencing and things like that, they do a good job. Maybe you don't need something like this, but here's an option.
But if you want Avenir, Apple will not give it to you, so you can go and get it from Bear.
Yeah, there you go.
I was joking with Gruber that if they really want to support the app, all they have to do is a one-time in-app purchase, $999. You get that font and you alone. So you have the only copy of Avenir for Vesper, the only copy of Futura. And I think they have enough designery friends that they would have easily funded it.
I like Avenir a lot. It's a sans serif, very nice, well-designed, pretty font. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of this fine episode. Election Day, I am going to offer you a break now so you can run out to the polls. Then we'll continue with Security Now in 1 minute. So quickly, go vote. Andy, I have. I'm sure Andy has is planning to if he hasn't yet.
And this is my I voted sticker.
I voted for Cthulhu.
Exactly.
It's a write-in Mills vote, but if you can spell it, you should get it. That's my point of view. Andy's at the Chicago Sun-Times and also blogs at CWOB, does a lot of other podcasts on the 5x5 network. It does a Google podcast, Material, on Replay, and of course joins us every Tuesday, and we're glad of it. Thank you, Andy.
Relay FM, but thank you.
Relay.fm. Let's say the whole thing. I can't remember if it's .tv or .fm, so good. Relay.fm. Thanks also to Renee Ritchie, who has his own series of podcasts, including the excellent Apple Talk. You'll find that at imore.com, along with his million-word-a-year writing. The guy is amazing and joins us every Tuesday. Thank you, Renee. Wait, are you going to get to stay home for a little while now, all the travel's over?
I think so. Yeah, you never know. I hope so. We'll see. Technology is interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Don't forget CES coming up.
Oh, yeah. I know. We'll see everything we're not going to get next year.
We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 1900 UTC. I hope you will join us live. Visit the chat room at irc.twit.tv. But if you can't, we can make on-demand versions available. Of course we can. We have the technology. Just go to twit.tv/MBW for your audio or video download or subscribe. That way you'll get every single episode, and you can choose iTunes or Stitcher or Slacker or TuneIn Internet Radio or the many Twit apps on almost every platform, including Roku and Apple TV and So there's plenty of ways to get it. But if you subscribe that way, you get it every single week. Yes, I saw it. Zune. It's available on the Zune. We could probably take that off now. Twit.tv/MBW. Thanks, guys. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to all of you. We'll see you next week.
Andy. Thanks, Carson.
Back to voting and then to work because break time is over.